Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Change Your Mind podcast, where we explore personal development, spirituality, and science. I'm your host, Chris Ashley, and I'm really excited. We're going to have a financial advisor on today. So we're going to hit personal development, but also some mindset around money, which I know a lot of people are feeling stuck in their finances. So it should be a really helpful episode. First, a couple quick announcements. Head over to the links in the show notes. You are going to find a wealth of resources. You'll find a link to my book, Change Your Mind to Change Your Reality. You'll find links to free downloads, my free live masterclass, my course, and of course, all of the links belonging to my guests as well. Hi, I'm Chris. When I was younger, I went through trauma that caused me to feel broken and lost. But my life changed after I had a spiritual awakening. Since then, I've dedicated my life to studying and learning from masters all around the world that have helped me to create a life of fulfillment and abundance beyond my wildest dreams. Now I'm dedicated to sharing everything I've learned so that you don't have to suffer for decades like I did. I've seen people's lives completely transform, and I share it all right here. So speaking of my guest, with me I have David Chudik. Did I pronounce your name right, David?
You actually did. So you get a star.
I always forget. So sometimes I forget to ask and then I just kind of wing it. Okay. With me today, I have David Chudik. So David's guiding principle for his wealth management practice revolves around the fact that how we handle our money should positively impact our lives and the lives of those around us. And all financial decisions should be made based on how they can enhance our lives. When it comes down to it, it's not really about the money, but what the money can do for us. I love that approach. So welcome, David. It's great to have you.
I am so excited to be here. I host my own podcast, but it is always exciting to be on this side of the microphone.
Yeah, and I was a guest on your podcast not too long ago, and we had a great conversation. So it's fun to continue it. It's the Weekly Wealth Podcast, right?
Absolutely.
All right, so go check that out, listeners. Okay, so David, I always start my episodes out the exact same way, and that is by asking my guest what their origin story is. So, you know, yes, how you got to be a financial planner, but also why do you take the unique approach that you do?
Wow. So you're going to make me think and get deep in the beginning, which I love.
Yeah. So, let's make some people get emotional. Let's do it.
Let's get emotional. So growing up, I didn't realize that hearing things like we can't afford that or those rich people, I thought that's what like all kids heard in their families, and that money was just always a limiting factor. That's just what it was. It was part of life, and there was never going to be enough money. I also thought it was normal, and maybe it is normal in the sense that it's typical or very common, that I kind of grew up with in a scenario where there's a victim mentality, maybe like, you know, kind of everybody's out to get us, and those rich people, you know, they're rich because they screw over the poor people, and, you know, we wouldn't be poor if it wasn't for the rich people. And yes, there may be some element that some rich people get rich by lying and stealing, but most rich people just simply get rich by providing value to the economy. They just do. A brain surgeon has a highly specialized skill. That's why brain surgeons get paid a lot of money, and they should. So I got kind of out into the world a little bit when I was in college, and you start seeing the world, and you start seeing maybe how other people, what their environments are. And I started seeing, you know, money is not a limiting factor for everybody. I mean, there are people who, let's say their car broke down in college, they could just call their parents and say, hey, you know, I need some new tires. And the parents just had money and could pay for new tires. And it wasn't a whole tragedy. And I did a lot of driving in college based on where I lived and where I went to school. And I listened to a radio show called Money Talk. And there was a guy named Bob Brinker. And he talked about just buying and selling stocks and bonds. And he would talk about how if you would have bought a certain stock at $10 and now it's worth $100, you made $90. And if you own hundreds and hundreds of shares, you made a lot of money. And that was never something that I was around, you know, the concept that money can make money. And it started to fascinate me that there are ways that if you behave and if you learn and if you gain knowledge, you can actually have your money working for you. And money can be a source of happiness, and it can be a source of joy, as opposed to the lack of money being a source of stress. So I did quite a few things, but I was always looking at ways that I could have a higher income than other people my age, just because I had been at that point where money was a limiting factor. Flash forward a few years, I had the opportunity to get some of my investment licenses and get my career started, and have operated, you know, since 2006, advising clients on how to handle their money in different capacities. But now I'm part of an incredible firm, Parallel Financial, and we have a lot of freedom to run our practices the way that we want. And I just decided that money is just numbers and decimal points, and pretty soon there won't even be money. There'll just be digital credits. But it's not really money that's the issue. It's what the money does for you. And there are two things that I like to tell my clients. Number one is that you probably can't name a problem that you've ever had in life that a little bit of money, you threw a little bit of more money at it, and the problem didn't at least get smaller. So I'm not saying that money solves all of your problems, because it doesn't. But even if you had, let's say, terminal cancer, would you rather have terminal cancer and have enough money to where your family maybe can not work and come to the hospital and see you? Or would you rather have terminal cancer and have your family also be worrying about how to pay for groceries and how to pay the rent? So, you know, when you look at that, and, you know, I've gotten really passionate about helping clients to enhance their lives by how they handle their money. And it's not only the low earning people. A lot of people that make a lot of money, they spend a lot of money too. And then there comes the money stress. So hopefully that answers your question. It's been a long road. I've been on all sides of the financial spectrum. I've been to where, you know, money was very, very, very limited. And I did the college kid thing where there are, you know, very few dollars. And then last week we were on vacation with the family, and we probably spent way too much money. But you know what? That was okay. We made some memories. We did a great fishing trip, and you know, the money provided some joy for us.
Thank you so much for sharing that. I think it's so important, because what we hear growing up becomes our filter, our lens, and we, without even realizing it, adopt the beliefs and the opinions of the adults that we grew up around, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, I was the opposite. My parents like lived off of interest in like the 80s. So, and they just bought CDs, right? So I was like very exposed to stocks and all of that, but so many people aren't. And I hear, really similar to what you were saying, so many people out there blaming the rich for their problems, right? Or just thinking that they're evil, or that money is evil. But money is a tool. Money is a symbol of freedom, like you so eloquently were saying. And it's really about that mindset, right? That lack mentality versus an abundance mentality. So how does someone shift their mindset around money when they have those deep-rooted seeds from their childhood?
I think the first way anybody changes anything is you have to look in the mirror and say, you know, what about me is good? And which of my habits or which of my thought processes serve me well? And which of my thought processes don't serve me well? And I think those are some really good questions just to ask ourselves. And when, we're not going to get political, I'm not going to tell you who to vote for, but there are a lot of people who they spend most of their day angry at the other political party, whichever the other party is. Now, I don't think that serves us well to be angry and highly upset with people who voted for a different candidate or a different party. So that's an example of just saying, does this serve me? Does this give me a better life? And then if you look at, we all go through times in life where for lack of a better term, crap happens, and maybe money is not as plentiful, or maybe you get laid off, or the economy happens. But if you're in your 40s and 50s and 60s, and you are always broke, that's on you. And I say that with love, because I guess maybe what I should say is it's on you to find the answers on how to no longer be broke. Life happens. Some people, you just said your parents lived off of interest. So you were born with a little bit of a head start financially from where a lot of people were born. And that's a beautiful thing. It's nothing to be ashamed of. And you probably learned a lot of good financial lessons, but not everybody has that. And when you get into adulthood, there comes a point where we all have to say, yeah, maybe my childhood wasn't perfect. Maybe my parents weren't perfect. Maybe I was instilled with some attitudes that were not beneficial to me. But now I'm 30, I'm 35, I'm 40, I'm 45. And these thoughts, they just don't serve me well. So how can I find some different thoughts? What podcasts can I listen to help me think differently? What books can I read? What people can I surround myself by? And yeah, so that's where I think we all need to start, is by looking in the mirror and asking ourselves, what parts of us don't serve us well?
I like your answer a lot, because we live in a time where knowledge is just everywhere. Yep. You know, there are so many books written. There's so many podcasts. There's so many YouTube channels. I'm reading Tony Robbins' Money Master the Game right now. And, you know, there's just so much information out there available that it really is on you. If you're not, it's not your fault, the situation you're in, but it's like, I say that with people who have gone through difficult times, because everyone does, right? Like, your trauma or your past isn't your fault, but your healing is your responsibility, right? And it's the same kind of thing. Like, it is your responsibility to fix it if you're complaining about it, if you're unhappy with it, if you're not feeling fulfilled with where you are in life. So I appreciate what you said. And, you know, this podcast is all about personal development, and sometimes it's hard to take that look in the mirror. But if you're not honest with yourself, you don't have that baseline, right? Yeah, there's a lot of blaming out there.
Absolutely. And to also ask yourself, like, what should money mean to me? Mm. And, you know, there are times where people, maybe they buy flashy stuff because they have maybe some underlying insecurities, and the flashy stuff is covering up some other shortcomings. So we have to ask ourselves, like, really, what should money mean to me, and what purpose in my life should it serve? And the goal is not necessarily always to accumulate as much money as possible. Sometimes the goal is for maybe a young married couple to get their budget under control. So if it's within their value system, you know, one of the parents can stay home with the kids and they live off of less money. But that in that scenario, they're fulfilling their values by how they're handling money. They're spending less. They're maybe buying less, you know, proverbial stuff, so they can have more time with kids. So what should your money do for you? What role should it play in your life? And just like in the actual financial planning process. So, Chris, if I were your financial advisor, one of the first things we would need to do is we'd need to get a baseline of where you are. How much money do you have? How much debt do you have? How much money do you make? What do you want to have happen? And then we can make intelligent recommendations. We need to do the same thing with our thoughts and our attitudes. We need to see where we are, and then we need to make purposeful decisions, and not just almost like instinctive and non-purposeful decisions.
I like that a lot. And as you were talking about people who buy flashy things, I don't know if you've read The Millionaire Next Door, but it's so interesting because he interviews all of these millionaires, and a lot of them, like the really wealthy people, are just wearing like t-shirts and jeans. They're driving a car that's functional. They're not living in mega mansions, but it's the people who are trying to display wealth that don't necessarily have it that are buying the name brand things. That's a big generalization, but that's kind of what they found with all these like studies. So I like that, like figuring out like why you want more money. And maybe it's so you can move to a better neighborhood with better schools for your kids, right? Or maybe it's so you can start a business that's going to change the world. You know, it doesn't have to be this completely selfish thing that people make it out to be, right?
Absolutely. No, money's a tool, and money should be a tool to do good things. So if you live in not a great neighborhood, and let's say you have young kids, and you work hard to make yourself more valuable and you earn more money, and now you're able to move your kids to a better, more safe neighborhood, money was part of the tool that got you there. And in that case, money gave your family a better life. I mean, there's just no other way around it. Now, you did the work to get the more money, but lots of other people do work to get more money, and then they just buy flashy stuff and don't necessarily improve their life. So money is a really, really, really deep issue. And it's not just dollars and cents. It's really kind of a window into our hearts.
Yeah. Talk to me more about that. So I know you're all about how money should positively affect us and the people in our lives. So just talk to me more about that. You know, what do you recommend to your clients? You know, what are you seeing with your clients? Like, where are their hearts and intentions lying?
So I can think of a few clients that are very high earners. And one of them said that we are always stressed about money. Now, the amount of money that they make, especially where we live, you know, they could literally earn 1/10 of their income and still be fine and still be above average. So there's plenty of money there. Now, what there is I think there's a little bit of lack of purposeful decision making. So, you know, doesn't matter who you are, you could be me or you can be a pro athlete, but you can nickel and dime yourself into poverty. Or if you're a pro athlete, you can, you know, thousand and dime yourself into poverty, but you can do that. But then also, what happens? Like, what are the things that married people argue about? Well, they argue about, you know, how to raise the kids, and, you know, money is another area where couples argue, because we all have different money personalities, and there's no money personality that's right. It's like, it's not like there's one way to think about money. But you know, typically there's a saving personality, and that's a great thing, but we're all going to die at some point. So how much money do you want to have in the bank and die with, as opposed to enjoying it to the appropriate level for you? Then of course we have the spenders, and the spenders are having a lot of enjoyment. And they'll say, you know, you don't live forever. And that's true, but you don't know how long you're going to live. So how much of that money should you be putting aside to prepare for the future? And those are some of the almost therapeutic type roles that I have to play with clients, is helping them to, you know, mesh their money personalities together and get to a point where they can both live with the financial decisions that they're making.
Yeah, that's interesting. And it really does. I mean, both are right in a sense, right?
Because, sure, no question.
Yeah. And it's like, it's also like, do you want to have something to pass on to your kids? Do you want to make sure if you get sick one day, like my in-laws have like a money set aside in an account for if they get sick when they're older, so that we won't have to pay for that.
Sure.
You know, all of these things that people think about. So it really is a lot of deeper issues, huh?
Well, and think about the peace that it probably gives them to know that when or if they get ill, and I'm not that old yet, but I'm getting older, and I start to see people my age or a little bit older getting sick, and it's all of a sudden, it's not like this way distant time in the future. And it probably gives your in-laws a lot of peace to know that they are not going to be a burden on you. And don't forget, money, you know, at its core, all money does is give options. So the fact that they have that account that's kind of earmarked to pay for their care, that does not mean that Chris Ashley is not going to help her in-laws. It just means that Chris will now have the option to help in the way that she sees fit. And also her in-laws will have the option to get help in the way that they see fit. So there may be some of the bathroom type things that they just don't want you to help with, that they'll pay a home health nurse, and that'll be best for everybody involved. But now, if they didn't have any money, there are times where daughter-in-laws and children, adult children, have to help with going to the bathroom. And you know, there's a little bit of a loss of dignity in that. So the money simply gives the option. That's all it gives.
Yeah, I was thinking about that earlier when you were talking about if you have terminal cancer. My dad passed away last year, and you know, he was able to be in hospice at home. Just something like that versus having to go somewhere, or like you said, the loss of dignity. So yeah. And what about other deeper issues like wanting to give back? You know, I think that says a lot about where your hearts and intentions are. If you're giving back with your money, you're using it to spread good in the world.
Yeah. So they say that money will amplify who and what you are. So if you're a jerk with a little bit of money and you get a bunch of money, you're going to be a bigger jerk. That's just because it, in a lot of ways, it allows you to do that. If you are generous, you're going to tend to be more generous. Now, that's not always the case, but again, we have to look at what is it about our personality? What is it about our thought processes that serve us well? And you know, we're told, at least in my faith, to love the least of these and to, you know, to help everybody. And I think that that's important. But it also speaks a little bit to our mentality. We can either have a scarcity mentality or an abundance mentality. So if I have a scarcity mentality, and if there's an organization that I really, you know, believe in, or if there's an individual that needs my help, and if I believe that there's only a finite amount of money. And if I help Chris out, if I have $100, I give her half of it. There's no more money, so I'm just going to be poor. Or I might believe that there are blessings that come when you're generous. I might believe that it would be worth it maybe for myself to sacrifice so that somebody else can have some sort of help. So there are a lot of different ways to look at generosity. But for me, I've always thought that, you know, there have been times where I needed help, and I would love to think that if I ever did need help again, there'd be somebody else out there that would help, because there are generous people exist. And I think that in many ways, the giver benefits more than the receiver in a giving scenario. Because to me, when I do it right, giving feels good. I mean, you feel like you've helped, and I think that's really, really important.
I think it's one of the reasons we're on this planet, personally, mm-hmm. to help each other, right? You know, they say NDE survivors are not asked how much money did you have, what kind of car did you drive. They're asked how much love did you give, how much did you help other people, what did you learn, you know? So, you know, none of us are leaving this earth with our possessions, right? With our possessions. So it's interesting, these different mentalities that you were just talking about around generosity and giving. Have you seen that actually play out with clients? Like the clients who have that mentality that the more I give, the more I'm going to get back, and seen that actually take place?
You know, you see both. You'll see people who will say some version of, I can't afford to give. And, you know, they may have a $2 million portfolio, but that could be that scarcity mentality. And sometimes people maybe instinctively know, like when they first start giving, they know that they're going to be led to give more. And there's a little bit of fear in that, I think, is just a human nature. But yeah, I've seen people. And giving is a big topic that we talk about. And in some cases, we talk about strategic ways of giving, because there are tax efficient ways to give. But at its core, people tend to be better people when they're giving with a good heart. Now, there are cases where rich people give money so their name could be on the sign, or they have a building dedicated to them, and there's not necessarily anything wrong with that, you know. Depending on the giver's heart, if their heart was really doing it so they could have a building named after them only, then maybe that's a little bit shallow. But if their heart was really just trying to give, and as a result they got some recognition, maybe that's not so bad. So You know, nobody knows what's in anybody else's heart. Sometimes we don't even know what's in our own hearts, or what's in our hearts might be somewhat conflicting. So it can be a really, really, really deep subject.
Yeah, absolutely. My dad, I just think about my dad, he donated to everything, literally. Like, he couldn't even pass a homeless person on the street without giving money. And his heart would just break seeing people on the street, you know. It makes me think of that Tony Robbins quote. It's like, if you can't give 10 cents on a dollar, you're not going to give a million on 10 million, right? Yeah. It goes back to, like, yeah, you said, money just amplifies who you really are.
Yeah. So did your dad ever have a time of financial stress or financial downturn?
Listen to this. My dad grew up dirt poor in Chicago. He was born in a two-bedroom apartment that he shared with his mother, his father, his brother, his grandmother, his uncle, and they had a boarder.
Wow.
He had nothing. And wow. He was like a serial entrepreneur. He started businesses and they all failed, right? He started a plant shop. He sold nuts and bolts. He sold paint. He sold pots and pans in Mexico for like 3 years. He lived down there. And then he finally started a business that just worked. And then wow. He sold it. He started a Yellow Page company, actually. And a company was going around buying up Yellow Page companies. He wasn't even trying to sell. Offered it to him. He sold. And then like 2 years later, the internet happened.
Oh, wow.
If that hadn't happened, like, he would have gone bankrupt. So my dad started out with nothing. Nothing at all.
Wow.
So, yeah. And he was super savvy about money. Like I said, he taught me all about stocks. And he bought a lot of CDs. And that's kind of how they lived for a long time. But yeah, it's all about, like, what's in your heart, like you said.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think that we all hopefully get to places in life because of the person that we are. And I think if you're a generous person, you just tend to attract, you know, there's the spiritual side of, like, blessings, but then also, like, if Chris is just a selfish jerk, like, I don't want to go into business for you or with you, or I don't want to be your employee, or I don't want to be around you. So, like, you would never benefit from anything that I could ever do for you. But if you're just a good person and you're generous, and I see that you think about other people and you're successful and you make money and you have nice stuff for yourself, you know, I think people around you are just going to benefit you more because you're like a valuable human being that's not just thinking about yourself. And I'm sure most listeners out there can think of one or two or three people in their lives that are just selfish jerks. And who wants to kind of be on that proverbial deathbed and think that nobody's on the deathbed and says, man, if I would have just not given that homeless guy that $10 bill, my life would be much better. I mean, most people are thinking the opposite. You know, I know I should have given more money to the United Way, and I know maybe I should have given more to the church, or I should have, but I didn't, and I wish I would have. So, you know, I'm guilty as charged. I mean, I'm not as generous as I should be, but I think it's something that we should all strive to do as much as we possibly can.
Yeah, it's so true about people have more regrets on their deathbed. And everything you said before that is true about, you know, the kind of person you are. And I feel like the older I get, the more I'm recognizing that as well. And a lot of it, and I'm really learning that this year, especially I'm involved in so many projects that I'm not getting paid for. Like, there's, you know, there's maybe stock options or partnership percentages. I have a lot of those projects going on. But it's really like going into these rooms and going into these meetings and deals with this mentality of, like, how can I serve you? How can I help you? What can I do for you? Because it's that reciprocity is going to come back to you.
Right. Right.
Right. It's,
yeah.
It's like,
and I don't want to be the guy that ends up, you know, with $50 million and employees that were making minimum wage. Like, to me, that's not a successful life. Should the owner that took more risk and you know, should they have more compensation? Of course they should. But, you know, and the question is different for every leader and every business owner. How much different should it be? But, I think we all have to look in our hearts and see how much of that wealth we should spread around to the team.
I love that. Yeah. And I think the world's starting to realize that, right? Like, I think people are starting to be like, hey, what is going on with these big corporations who have all these rights and they're paying people nothing in third world countries in dangerous conditions, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
So going back to the mindset, and maybe we touched on it a little bit, but I just want to ask you directly, what is it that blocks a lot of people from making money? Because I'm sure we all know people in our lives who always have like something going on, and it seems like everything they try just falls short.
Well, I think one of the fundamental truths of money and income, and I don't always like this truth because it doesn't always work in my favor, is that we are paid based on how easy it is to replace us. So I can't do what LeBron James does. That's why he gets paid a heck of a lot more money than I do. Now, is LeBron James more valuable to the world than a school teacher or a nurse? Probably not. But is anybody, you know, do you have 30,000 people paying hundreds and hundreds of dollars to go see a nurse, you know, do her rounds in a hospital? Well, no. So we have to first say, we have to figure out ways to be valuable. And if we're not valuable and if we're not difficult to replace, then we get the minimally paying jobs. And I don't even like that fact, but I think it's a fact to a large extent. There are always exceptions. And then I think that we have to have, as a society, you know, kind of just goals and have grit and say, you know, this is what I want. This is what I'm going to make happen. My oldest son is going into his senior year at the University of South Carolina. And it's kind of amazing the people that he will be competing against for jobs. They're not that good. I mean, they're not that driven. And you know, there's a lot of entitlement. So, you know, you have to look at your why you want to be financially successful, and then you have to choose your heart. I mean, working hard is hard. Being irreplaceable is hard, but so is being poor. So, you know, choose your heart and do the hard things that'll help give you an easier life later on.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that being poor is hard as well. So I'm thinking about people. So one of my mentors who I took my life coach training with, her name is Mary Morrissey, and she likes to say she has two black belts, one in success and one in failure. And she built this amazing multi-million dollar company, and then she lost everything overnight when it came out that her husband at the time had embezzled money from the company, and he ended up going to jail. Newspapers thought she was involved. They dragged her name through the mud. Like, all the investors were pissed. And she picked herself up and from scratch with nothing, grew another multi-million dollar business, paid all the money back, and is wildly successful. And there's a lot of stories. I think, was it Grant Cardone that was on some TV show where they're like, here's like $100 and like go build like a multi-million dollar. And I mean, those are the wrong numbers, but yeah. So there's just some people that seem to have it, right? Where it's like, they can do this over and over again. And like, what is that ingredient that people like that have?
I think it's the willingness to do two things. Number one is the willingness to do uncomfortable things. And then number two, it's probably the willingness to stop doing the things that they shouldn't be doing. So if Grant Cardone truly did take $100 and turn it into millions, he probably wasn't sitting on a couch watching TikTok 4 hours a day. Now, he may have been posting social media for business purposes, but scrolling on social media is easy. The result of scrolling on social media is hard. You're poor and you don't have a job, or you don't have, you haven't built significant value. So, you know, we have to ask ourselves, what's our why? You know, why do we want to do this? And then we have to be willing to do the work. And then we also have to be willing to not do the things that we shouldn't be doing. And that could be anything from mindlessly scrolling on social media to, let's say you're a business owner and the budget's a little bit tight, but you just know that you need to hire an assistant to do some things because the owner doesn't need to be running payroll and paying bills and answering the phones. You know, sometimes you just have to say, I know that I have these unique abilities and I can generate revenue and perform high activity tasks that will increase productivity and success. So I have to take the leap and I can no longer be the person that cleans the bathroom. It doesn't mean I'm too good to clean the bathroom. And maybe every once in a while I should, just kind of as a team building thing. But ultimately, we all have to look at, like, what are the few things that I can do that will generate revenue and generate success? And those are hard to do because sometimes, you know, I know a lot of business owners that they have like this badge of honor that I work 90 hours a week. Well, first of all, nobody can actually work 90 hours a week. You can be at the office, but you're not actually working, or you can't do that prolonged. I mean, maybe for a project or two. So, but what's uncomfortable, because it makes a business owner come to the conclusion that they're not all that incredibly important, is when a business owner can say, I am going to start delegating things to people who are better at those things than I am. And typically the business owners are not great at administrative tasks. They're not great at organizing, things like that. And when they get to the point where they're willing to hand those things off, they can have success. So hopefully that answers the question, at least on the business owner side, is you got to do hard things that will produce high results, and then you have to not do the things that won't produce results. And then I think we all have to just get rid of the victim mentality. Life is hard. Life is not fair. And we have to just figure out ways to succeed. And yes, it is easier for some people to succeed. I mean, I think some people are just smarter and more driven. If you told me just to go work hard and play in the NBA and I could do it, I'm like, no, I can't. I'm like 5'8". You know, I just don't have the tools to play in the NBA. So that's, you know, you could say that's not fair, right? Why did God not give me the ability to dunk a basketball? Well, he didn't, but he gave me other abilities. So we got to find our abilities. And we just, you know, the victim mentality, I think just... we need to have an empowered mindset that we control a lot more of our future than we actually think that we do.
I love everything you just said. I really appreciate those answers. I loved that you touched on victim mentality, and I want to talk a little bit more about that in a second. But you said something else earlier that I want to ask a question about when you were talking about hiring that assistant to answer the phones and do the admin work, even if the budget's tight. And that made me think about taking risks. And I think about my husband, he's the president of a company and the CEO is just this badass woman. And she takes more risks than anyone I know. She's like got her house on the line. She's got like everything. And she's like, it doesn't matter. Like, I'm going to go die and go to Jesus in the end anyway. Right? Like, and that's her mentality. And like, talk to me about like taking risks, because, you know, there's that old adage, without risk, there's no reward. So do you think that financially successful entrepreneurs tend to take more risk?
Some of the most wealthy people that I know that are business owners that have several homes, and you would look at them, you know, they have cars that are just, you know, $150,000, $200,000 cars. They've been bankrupt several times and then they've built businesses again. So people don't understand the risks that entrepreneurs take. I'm actually starting a local mastermind group in my area of just entrepreneurs. We're just going to get together and support each other and everything, because nobody, if you're not an entrepreneur, you don't know what an entrepreneur deals with. So my wife is a nurse. The hospital will never not have enough money to write her a paycheck. If her computer at work blows up, she'll contact somebody and a new computer will just magically show up the next day and somebody else will set it up and tech support will get her online and she'll be up and running. Now, in my office, if a computer blows up, I need to buy a new one. So I need to have the money to buy a new one. I either need to hire a tech support team or I need to know how to set it up with the right antivirus softwares and everything else. So the things that we as entrepreneurs have to deal with is simply different than what W-2 employees need to deal with. Now, it's not better or worse, and I would never change from being an entrepreneur, but it can be overwhelming and draining at times. So when we finally do reap the financial rewards, you know, I think it's okay to say, I deserve it. I took risks. There was a chance I could have lost my house, because literally, you know, oftentimes entrepreneurs are personally guaranteeing debt. And if the sales don't come in, that entrepreneur still has to pay that debt off. So it can be overwhelming to a very, very large extent.
Yeah, totally. And you just touched on exactly what we were talking about before, with how some people just have that, where, you know, people who have lots of money and they've been bankrupt several times and they come back. And I think it just all speaks to this mindset and all those things they're willing to deal with and also let go of, like you were saying earlier.
You know, they say winners win. And to me, I just love that, because if you're a winner, you freaking figure it out. And sometimes it's easy to figure it out. I had a few really big clients just kind of walk in my door towards the end of last year. And it would, you know, these were clients that moved the needle and they just found me. And that was easy. And I love when it's easy, but there are other times where business is really hard, but you just got to figure it out. And you got to grind your way through, and it can be difficult.
Yeah, it makes me think of being adaptable too, right? Like, if what you're doing isn't working, you don't keep doing it, right? It's like literally the definition of insanity, right? Like, you try something else and eventually there's something. Like, I keep going back to Tony Robbins because he says so many smart things, but it's like, now it's out of my head, but like eventually, don't say I've tried everything, because you haven't tried everything, because if you had tried everything, you would have found the one way that works, right?
Exactly.
Like, there's a path out there where it all falls into place and you just haven't tried it yet, because you're not either, you're so laser focused on what you have in front of you that you're not thinking about options, or you're just not willing to be adaptable.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no question. I interviewed on my podcast a guy named Doug Mitchell, and he owns a company called Building Great Sales Teams, and he's a sales trainer. And we were talking about how there's a prevailing notion that in today's world, nobody wants to work. So, you know, and every generation says, oh, these young people, they don't want to work. Nobody wants to work. And people only want to work for six figures right out of high school. And that's just not reasonable. And he said, that's not really the question. The question that you should be asking is, why does nobody want to work for me? And what can I do at my organization to attract quality people? Because there are organizations that have quality people. So quality people do exist, but if you're not attracting them, again, that's the look in the mirror factor. Now, have there been periods in history where it was easier to find quality people than other times? Of course, no question. But still, there are companies that don't have as big of labor struggles as other companies, and you have to ask yourself why.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's go back to the victim mindset. You know, so many people are like, oh, the 1%, or oh, the government, or, you know, there's all of this blaming. Have you noticed, well, I guess just comparing their mindset to someone who has a really abundant mindset, what have you noticed? You know, have you noticed that those people never really move forward? Do they eventually kind of accelerate? Like, what are the trends that you've seen?
You know, one of the trends is, if you think about all of the truly successful people that you know, how many of them are posting on social media like 15 times a day? Probably not that many, unless it's like business related. I think social media has created a need for a lot of us to put like our highlight reel forward. So then what happens is we see, you know, your friends who are, quote, always on vacation and have nicer cars, but you never know like the backstory to anybody's finances. And trust me, I've seen people that you would think are incredibly wealthy that literally couldn't come up with a couple $100s because they're, you know, their income may be $80,000 a month, but their expenses are $79,500. And if anything goes wrong at all, they have no money. So I think that social media has created this whole like comparison mindset, which I think is evil. I think social media has a lot of, I mean, yeah, there are some positives to it, And you should actually join the Weekly Wealth Podcast Facebook group. That's a positive part of social media. But I think that social media creates a lot of comparison. And you'll never compare favorably with somebody else's highlight reel that is only the best of what they want you to see. So then you start thinking, well, you know, all these other people have more stuff than me, nicer stuff, and they just got it because it can't possibly be because they work harder. It has to be because they were lucky. So if I wanted to have the biggest building in my town, I could do one of two things. I could work really, really hard and I could build a tall building. I could take some risks. I can borrow money. I could learn how to do construction. I can build the tallest building, or I can build a medium-sized building and just knock yours over. And, you know, it's much easier to build a small building and knock yours over. And now mine is the biggest. So, you know, sometimes I think we just need to ask is that, are those other people, number one, are they truly successful? And if they are truly successful, what are they doing that I'm not doing? Because I'd like to be truly successful as well.
Yeah, success leaves clues, right? Mm-hmm. One of the best quotes ever. And I think what you're speaking to is so important, that people will cheer you on as long as you're not more successful than them, right? And then as soon as you become more successful, that's when they turn on you, because it reminds them that they're not successful, right? That they're not doing it. So yeah, you're over there nodding. Talk to me about it.
Well, a couple years ago, when my car was newer, I got a couple years worth of free services, oil changes and such at the dealership. And at times they would give me a loaner. So one time they actually gave me a Range Rover as a loaner car, and I don't drive a Range Rover. So first I was thinking, you know, cars can't make you happy. And then I was like, yeah, no, this car might be able to truly make me happy, which is not true. But so I live about 30 miles from the dealership. So conveniently, I told the dealership that, you know, I had to go back to my house, and I couldn't make it back to drop the car off that night. So I got to keep the Land Rover for a day or two. And it was amazing. Like, how many people said, oh, look who's rich now. And I was like, oh, look who's judgmental. It's not even my car. You know, there was one guy that I actually consider a friend that owns a business, and he said, you know, I should be charging you more since you're so rich. And I said, not my car. I give it back tomorrow. So there was like an automatic feeling of jealousy for something that wasn't even real. It wasn't even my car. I don't have a $150,000 car. But when people saw that, they automatically, quite a few people had to just bring in some form of almost degrading me for having something that was expensive. And the joke was on them because it wasn't even mine. But, you know, if you have a crappy car, and if I have what you perceive to be a really nice car, again, you can ask yourself, what are the things that over time you could do that would give yourself the ability to financially be able to afford a better car? Or you can just in some way, shape, or form say that I'm a bad, selfish, horrible person because I have a nicer car than you. And those are some of the mind games that we need to play with ourselves.
That's wild. Mm-hmm. That's like watching a live psychology experiment unfold in front of you with people you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I got quite a few people that, you know, said some things that were kind of sarcastic and not that nice about a car that wasn't even mine. So
that's crazy. I think I brought this up on your podcast, and it's an example that I keep talking about, and I'm not going to be able to talk about it for too much longer because it's like a historical event that's almost out of people's minds now. But when that submersible went down to look at the Titanic wreckage, is that what it's called? A submersible? It wasn't a submarine. Yeah. It went down to look at the Titanic wreckage, and it was, you know, a bunch of very wealthy people on it and a kid, right? Like, regardless. And it imploded, and we found out later they had this like horrible death. They knew it was happening. They could hear the cracks. The thing like plummeted, and just awful, like heartbreaking, awful. Mm-hmm. All these news outlets were posting about it on social media, and the comment sections were just freaking horrific. You know, it was like, oh, good, some billionaires are dead. Like, kill the rich, eat the rich, you know, all these things, screw the rich. And it was just like, these are people's lives. And it's like, do you think any of those people posting those comments are going to get wealthy with that kind of mindset? Like, no, of course not.
Yeah, no, I agree.
It's disgusting.
Yeah, and I also think that people that are very valuable to the marketplace, I don't think they have the time to sit and comment on social media articles anyway. So I think there's a lot we can all learn from that. Is it's easy to be a keyboard warrior, but you know, ultimately, social media, I think we're all pretty well served to limit it to some extent.
Yeah, there's, you know, I think it was Brené Brown had that speech about like, if you're not in the arena doing the damn thing, then like your opinion doesn't even matter to me.
Right.
I posted some little like TikTok short about internet trolls because I was genuinely curious, you know, like what is it that they're getting out of it? Because, you know, when people are, I almost feel bad for people that there must be so much pain or fear in their life or unhappiness that they have to sit out there and just degrade others and attack others and bring others down. And I remember I got a comment on it and it just blew my mind. This guy was like, it's actually really cathartic for me. It was like such an honest comment that being an internet troll online and starting fights and attacking people online was cathartic for him. And I just thought, wow, like, thank you for your honesty. But it just says so much about that person's life that that's what he needs to do to feel better.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and the internet's not real and social media is not like the real world. So I think we'd all be more better served to interact in real life as opposed to the internet. But, you know, who am I to say? I always, you know, I've never understood the selfie concept. Like, number one, everybody knows like what you look like. And number two, it's not even what you really look like. But there's never been a time in history that anybody could get instant gratification and approval than now. I mean, you post a selfie and it doesn't matter if you're ugly or not. There's going to be 50 people telling you how beautiful you are, you know? And I don't get it, but nobody asked me.
Yeah, it's a weird time we live in. And all of these people who are becoming, you know, influencers or social media stars because of maybe their looks or because of, you know, whatever they're posting, their highlight reel, have suddenly become these quote unquote experts that are now giving their opinion on things and people are listening to that. It's just like a wild time, bringing it back to business too, right? Like,
oh yeah.
Like, well, especially in the coaching industry, you see a lot of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, some of the quote financial advice that, you know, influencers give is literally beyond anything that could even be considered logical. But, you know, if you're an influencer, all of a sudden you have some sort of authority, which you really, really don't. So.
Yeah. Well, this has been such a great conversation. I can't believe it's already a little after two. So I want to honor your time and just thank you so much for coming on. This was just enlightening. And I think a lot of people are going to find it really helpful. And I'm sure a lot of people, I know you gave a little plug for your Facebook group, but I'm sure a lot of people want to know how they can connect with you to learn more. So please share how people can find you and what you're up to.
Yeah. So check out the Weekly Wealth Podcast. You could look on Apple, Spotify, all the major platforms, or just go to www.weeklywealthpodcast.com. We put out episodes every week and we really just try to help people to live better lives by how they handle their money. If you ever have any questions, I'm always happy to point anybody in the right direction. You can just email david@parallelfinancial.com. You know, if there's nobody that has too little money or too much money, I can, you know, my way to give back to the world is by meeting with anybody. And, you know, we've all been to where we need a little bit of help and we've had some money issues. So yeah, Weekly Wealth Podcast, check it out.
Yeah. Thank you for what you're doing in the world. That's really important. And I love your mentality and your outlook. That's really beautiful. And if you're listening, please send this to someone who could use it. Like, comment, share, subscribe, all the things. And I will see you next week on the podcast. Take care, everyone.